What's good? This is Tevin, your host here at Combined Culture Radio.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jalen, Super Ultra Extra, your co-host. And here at Combined Culture, we're here to touch on multiple aspects of the culture.
Our first show is Wednesday, August 16th at 7 p.m. Tune in to spread the culture.
Have you seen Kebu's Fuzzy Boo Van? It's a giant furry blue Muppet mobile that brings music and joy wherever it's found in Portland and across the region. We're having a contest this summer. If you spot the van, post a picture on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter with the hashtag Fuzzy Boo, and you'll be entered to win a chance to have Fuzzy Boo at your event, as well as other prizes. Each picture you take is another chance to win. For more info and clues on where to find the van, go to kebu.fm/fuzzyboo.
You are listening to KBO Portland, 90.7 on the FM dial. This is Talking Earth. And I'm here in the studio with two poets that I have lived with. One of them, Melissa Solito, has produced community arts and literary events in Portland, including a First Thursday art event in her apartment, and a popular reading series at Three Friends Coffee House that lasted 6 years. Her newest project is a monthly working artist interview at People's Food Co-op in Southeast, and she is also my wife.
Hooray!
Yes.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, and thank you, Melissa. And then also with us is local poet Mike G.
Hi, Patrick.
I lived with him back in the early aughts, or is
that's right. I no, think it was
that's wrong. That's the 2009, 2010, early
something
aughts is like 2001. Yes,
yeah.
I can never.
Yeah, 10 to 11-ish.
I don't know how people in the past century could deal with that. You know,
it was
how
a
did,
long time ago.
How did you refer to like? Oh, I knew them back in the 19. Yeah,
it was like another lifetime ago, Patrick. It was yes. Poet's Porch.
It was Poe's Porch. It was very fun. Except when the spiders attacked.
Yes.
Yes.
They've hacked.
Yeah. But the dolphins, we're still okay with the dolphins. The coming yes. human dolphin wars.
And we're okay with the nanoparticulates that the chemtrails drip.
Oh, I'm not even. I'm so far behind. You're going to have to enlighten us tonight.
You just need to know you're okay with it.
Yes. And you've. Well, you mentioned you've had stuff published, but your friends have published it.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like whenever a poet friend says, hey, I have an anthology I'm putting out, then those of us in the know get on board with that. And that's a great way to get published without having to go at it blindly. So I'm happy that certain friends have published stuff, and hopefully they did it on merit, not simply because I'm their friend. But hallelujah for that. Friends who are publishers.
Okay, and did any of those anthologies have titles, and can people find them out there?
Oh, there's the Ghost Town Vancouver series. It's now an open mic held at Angst Gallery in Vancouver. But Ghost Town Volumes 1 and 2, Chris Luna, Tony Partington, editors. I think that can be found with a Google search. Our old buddies Starlight Motel and Chris Ridenour put out an anthology back in like 2009 or so. I can't remember the name of it.
I think I have another one that has you in that, and that I was in too. That was
I think Elizabeth Archer's.
Melissa, you were
I
in that.
I was too, yeah.
And do any of us remember the title of that?
Well, it had photographs and poems, didn't it?
Yes.
Elizabeth Archer's was great at both. It is great at both. And what was it called?
Outsider Poets or something?
I should know that because I had her photographs up in my apartment as a show.
Something like Outsider, but that might not be exact. But thank you, Elizabeth.
Yes.
So, Mike, did you have any poetry you wanted to share right now? Like,
Oh, sure.
I mean, I guess we were kind of going with a couple themes tonight of work and how to deal with work. Well, trying to be an artist.
Well, I have something I just wrote exclusively for KBOO about my current job. I'm not going to give my employer's name because you never know these days. But I work events and see a lot of people and have a lot of different job titles depending on the day and my assignment. So I will read something like that. I just want to say, give a shout out to my girlfriend Brenda, who doesn't entirely understand what I do at my job, so this will help her. And I just had a fun time tonight at this open mic named Sortovia. You can look it up. It's Sortovia at google.com. Just wanted to give a plug to that. Here's a poem. Sometimes I am a hand stamp man. I am here to stamp your hands. A true American hero. All kinds and types and classifications of hands, the flabby, liver-spotted, ligament-cartilage-damaged hands of the very old, hands so thin I'm afraid the hand stamper will go right through them, young, not yet stretch-marked hands, tight hands of babies, so tiny the stamp eclipses the entirety. Hands of color and hands white as paper. I stamp hands with neither prejudice nor second thought, because if you need leave and wish to come back, you can't without a stamp. really. I could give a damn about your hand, ma'am, but you can bet your ass I'm gonna stamp it. It's my job. Sometimes I'm a badge checker man. I am here to check your badge. A true American hero. All kinds and types and classifications of badges. At times I need to use a machine to scan your badge. At times I need to merely see your badge. Either way, you better have your badge or you're going nowhere but home. This is true even if I love you. It's my job. Sometimes I'm an elevator operator man. I am here to operate the elevator. A true American hero. I am not here to push your buttons. All of those buttons you see but dare not touch are mine. Isn't that nice? Would you like to go up or down? Up or down? Sideways is not an option. And no weird elevator commentary, please. It's all been said before. You are not funny. I am funny. It's my job to be the only funny man here in this up and down box. For the elevator told me so. Sometimes I'm a check room attendant man. I'm here to check your things and keep an eye on your things while you, it is hoped, enjoy the show. A true American hero. So countrymen, give me your coats, your hats, your umbrellas, your... Oh, you got baggage? You look like you got baggage to me. It's okay, everyone does. Let me keep an eye on your baggage for a time. Isn't that nice? Oh no, you lost your checkroom token? I'm sorry. Then you've also lost your things. Unless you can give a detailed description of your things, tell me the things' secret mystery. Wait, oh, it's the black one, you say? That's too bad. Nearly everything we have here is black, including the hearts of the secret shoppers if I do anything wrong, like giving you your things without you proving it. And sometimes I'm an usher man. I'm here to remind you of what you've forgotten, like your left from your right. No, ma'am, your other right. Like your ABCs, and when it's not okay to photograph the curtain or to videotape. A true American hero. Sometimes when a faux intellectual, faux sophisticate prick, the kind of patron who attends any NPR OPB event, blows by me without showing a ticket or otherwise acknowledging my existence while I'm trying to do my job, I've been known to drop a life is easy bomb. Patron says, no, no, I'm sure we can figure it out without your help. And I say, life is easy. There's nothing easier than life. Because sadly, sometimes work does not bring out my best self. Thank you, Patrick.
that was brilliant.
Oh.
That's my job.
Yeah.
Sticking to it.
Someone got annoyed with me the other day that I didn't just, you know, I was like, oh, did someone give you like the paperclip with that? You know, for your bag? And he's like, that's my bag. And it's like, and somebody else was exactly. like, one of my coworkers was like, that's his bag. Okay, yeah. There was absolutely nothing in the bag, so I was kind of being, I don't know.
It was safe. It was safe.
I think we were both being autistic, even though we weren't.
The three of us, this is Melissa here, have that bond, I hadn't thought about it too, but of working in customer service positions. And I am looking for another one right now. Anyone wants to pick me. I worked as a security guard for about 5 months. So Mike, when you're reading from your poem about checking badges, that was part of my job too, although I was in a school, and so I got to know the people, and I could tell if someone was visiting, and so I got kind of lax, so it's just as well I'm not a security guard anymore.
It's not easy.
Yeah, no. I would just not.
I did try that before, and I didn't do a very good job either. I was usually just writing. I think I read Ulysses while I was working as a security guard.
And sometimes I get things like, oh, I'm the chef, or I'm the president of the event. Oh, okay, go right ahead, because I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tough.
But, okay, actually, this is where I have poor planning. Melissa, do you want to talk about your reading series, or it's not a reading series, it's a working artist interview.
Yes.
Series. Did you want to tell everyone out there?
I would love to.
Okay.
Thank you for asking. So so this is an event that, that was part of a format that I had before, although other people have done the interviewing. Patrick has been one of the people who's done the interviewing. Rio Hibbler was an interviewer. But basically, the idea is that somebody comes to the event, and instead of doing a 20-minute set of poetry, and it can be a poet, a different kind of writer, a musician, or an artist, performs a little bit of their work, and then we have a conversation about how do you make art and how do you make a living in Portland. Because there are some people who are paid to do both, but there are many people, and especially poets, you know, who do not realistically expect that that is going to be how they pay all of their bills. And so, and I've found that people like me, I mean, we love to, you know, well, what is your writing routine? What rituals do you have? And do you have a day job, or what? Or are you writing as a freelancer? So my first guest is going to be David Milholland, who's really a Renaissance man. He's, as well as being a writer, he's been made films, and he is a self-employed sort of Renaissance man. You know, he comes up with these artistic projects. And so he's going to be the guest, and it's going to be, the first one is Sunday, next Sunday, August 20th, at People's Food Co-op in Southeast Portland in their community room. And I'm very happy that People's is co-sponsoring that. And yes, that is the day before the eclipse. So I'm competing with an eclipse.
But on the good side, it'll be the day before the, it's the day before the end of the world.
That's right. Well, during the eclipse, I'm going to be watching Netflix. Isn't that nice?
You'll be watching the eclipse on Netflix.
I don't want to see like little piles of ash with NASA-approved eclipse glasses on top of them when I walk out either, so I hope it's not the end.
Yeah, and the Triffids will be walking around right after.
Oh, no.
Everyone's blind. No.
And the dolphins.
The dolphins. The dolphins. It'll be the dolphins walking around killing everyone.
Oh, God. We got 1 week.
Do you have any more to tell us about the dolphin human war, or is there something else you'd like to tell us about?
Well, interesting. Mike? I first brought that up. Melissa was just talking about the Working Artist interview series, and I did that way back in 2011.
Right.
That was fun, and I think I had fun just kind of going off on the dolphin human war. But things have gotten so much more complicated since 2011 that I don't even know what to think about the world now. So I just write things.
I could read a poem. Patrick's looking confused right now.
Either
listeners,
of us can read a poem, but I have no further updates on the dolphin human
war.
Yeah.
Did you want to read a poem, Melissa, then?
Sure. Okay. Maybe they'll start speaking to you, the dolphins.
Yes.
Oh, they don't.
I got to. So, I hope so.
So I'm going to set up this poem. It's about temping, and it's at OHSU. So I'll say that because then it makes more sense. But it was a while ago. And I was temping as an assistant in cardiothoracic surgery. So here's the poem. Lunch break on the Hilltop Hospital skywalk. I adapt to vertigo, my daily practice. Far-fetched picnic, sandwich in hand, above smudge clouds fabricated shape. Adopted cities, postcard cars and river. Obtained and an enigmatic, today's familiar view. My temp job lunch break when I leave someone else's desk. Anemic, heartsick, ready. Brisk weaving past gurneys steered by unmet coworkers in blue. I should choose, and maybe I do. What I believe and what I can handle is my suspension bridge. I pace it for exercise. I believe engineering holds. This is safe, glass walls enclosed. There are no edges here. A woman coaxes herself forward, eyes ahead. No one can convince anyone of seismic safety when your heart knows free fall. Man-made structures free me to look out on sky, forget my reckless desires, instinctual plunges, these airplanes and their imagined fires that I flee over and over. For an hour, I accept fictions that allow flight and cloud-filled nests. A bandaged man walks past me and asks, am I lost? Thinking I'll know and that I'm well.
Oh, right on. Mm.
Thanks.
Right on.
It was an interesting job. I like working around medical people. Sometimes I felt like I was kind of a spy because I don't know. Poets, such a different kind of environment.
Poets in workplaces are spies.
True.
Always. Did they seem like nice people?
They were very, you know, I really do enjoy working around medical people. And I actually worked on this poem while I was temping.
Oh, excellent.
I'm just kidding. Oh. On my lunch break.
Okay. Mike, did you want us to take a break before you read something, or did you have something ready?
Do you need to take a break?
I don't need to take a break.
Okay.
I do want to play something at some point, but it's only 2 minutes long.
That's cool, because I have a couple things of a little bit of length. I wrote a novel in 2003 about work. So I used to write a lot of prose all the time before I got in the poetry scene. This is about 9 minutes. Is that okay?
No, it's totally, that's okay. Great.
Okay. I used to work in Michigan before I moved here at a restaurant, a family restaurant, kind of like your Sherry's here. It was called Big Boy back in Michigan. Family restaurant, no booze, busy as hell. It was traumatizing, and I stayed there for 12 years before I had the guts to move here. So I'd like to read a fictionalized account of my experience as a waiter. Pigs at the trough, and I basically play the part of a female waitress here, but it's all how I felt. Peggy Martinez zipped into the waitress aisle, her pink ponytail whisking side to side. Multiple urgencies cast stones for her attention. Her section was brimming with the hungry and the pissed. Her armpits were soaked. Screw Nutty Joe. That fuck sits and leers at my tits pretending to sip coffee. No one drinks that slow. She shuffled through her ticket orders, attempting to make sense of them. Table 56, pork chops and liver. Shit, I punched that in 20 minutes ago. And where? Oh my God, the spaghetti dinner's for 58. Peggy sucked in a mouthful of air tasting like greasy onion rings, licked her ticket-flipping finger, and gazed in resignation at the next overdue order. Damn it. I don't want to get donkey brains to deal with this. Hey, watch out! Larry bore past her, sweating and mumbling. He twisted his tray to avoid colliding with Mary, the hostess, dropping F-bombs and French fries before vanishing into a fat, cacophonous fog of flapping arms and accusing voices. Peggy, said Mary, slouching from the burden of menus, stacked heavy and thick as two phone books under each arm. You have a foretop waiting. But Mary, Peggy glanced out at the eaters. A baby screamed, ominous clang of a dropped fork, chewing faces of the swine. Forget it, I can't show my face out there empty-handed. She walked up to the kitchen window. In order to see the cook, she extended her 5-foot height by standing on tiptoes. Fred kept his back turned, slopping cheese sticks onto hidden plates. Two gray smudged handprints glared from the gorilla strong shoulders of his grease-blotched, untucked smock. Fred was in his own. He was methodical in his sloppiness, took his work as a serious charge, and hated to be interrupted. Dale, sweating at the grill, glanced up at Peggy through pink eye slits in his eye bags, wearing the hunched, glazed look of a man wanting to kill himself but lacking the guts. My God. Peggy's heart turned mush and dripped at the misery. Dale's mouth twitched like that of a hooked fish. He looked down and flipped another patty, charred and shrunk to a miniature hockey puck. Peggy steeled her courage and cleared her throat. Fred? Arrgh! Fred kept his back to her, his bristled buzz cut glistening and ruddy scalp skin beating under the heat lamps. He shoved his meaty paw into a cubby hole below, yanked out a pile of plates, and clanked them onto the countertop. Onto each he plopped careless fistfuls of cheese sticks, several of which ricocheted off, joining the other mashed inedibles on the floor. Fred, Fred, you have anything for me, please? Fred stopped working. He gripped the edges of the mounted cutting board and disconcertingly rocked on his feet from soles to toe tips. Peggy was transfixed by the cold, autistic back-and-forth rhythm. Silent and neck-knotted, Fred fixed his gaze to the dull steel of the grill's upright, grease-catching extension. Rocking to and fro, the squeals of his heavy, swollen shoes sliced through the rushed kitchen clamor like a scythe through living gristle. Look, Fred, Peggy sighed. I don't want to get donkey brains again, but tip money doesn't grow on trees, you know. Please. With preternatural quickness, Fred wheeled around, his sharp Adam's apple bobbing up and down its red-necked length, his ice cube eyes glowering with gray hate, his frown tight and crooked from teeth biting hard and deep on the inner cheek. He lifted a plate of limp onion rings, mashed down with half the breading gone, exposing unappetizing tubes of rubbery yellow. Curling his closed lips into a smirk, he cocked his wrist and flicked the plate across the counter towards Peggy's face. She jerked her hand up just in time to avoid a broken nose. Peggy set the plate down on the beverage expediting counter. "Be careful, Peg." The timid voice belonged to Robert. The glass racks screeched as he yanked them out of their metal slots. Greasy ropes of black hair whipped from underneath his work cap. "Don't want Fred walking out, Peg. Don't want donkey brains in the kitchen again. That would be hell." "Oh, Robert." Peggy surveyed the carnage as other servers crowded and clamored for drinks. Hot vapors streamed from just washed glasses. Sweating, Robert pressed a glass against the Coke dispenser. It hissed with sick crackling. Robert cursed, then turned to the bus tub on the floor, brimming full with broken glasses, adding the latest ruin, his face a white flag with darkly suffering, "Why me?" hole-punched eyes. Peggy yanked on her bangs. "I'm not dreaming. We're in hell already." A moment later, she glanced up at the ceiling fan thrumming loosely upon its axis, then sauntered like a sleepwalker, expressionless and unperturbed by the general mayhem, to the next workstation. Sally, the young salad girl, was struggling, her white blouse rendered diaphanous from sweat. She slapped at the pink and green lettuce in the bin, flashing worried looks at the overhead ticket carousel. "Got something for me, Sally?" "Yeah, Thousand Island for 60, but be careful." Sally tried to untwist her bra strap, failed, grimaced. "Sue's looking for you." "I'll be dealing with donkey brain shortly," Peggy said. She adjusted her hand's position under the tray for proper balance. She breathed in, blew out. "Is the bullshit worth it? Am I not worth more than a pet gerbil spinning itself to death on its toy wheel?" Noises stung her ears like hot sand whipped in a desert wind. Forms brushed past. Shuffles of harried, desolate co-workers. Angry customers' heels clacking the floor's lacquer. Peggy started moving. At least the gerbil has fun till his little heart bursts. She stood before her section and shouted and slouched. The hostile snapping of fingers shouts. "This sucks," she thought. "Well, here I stand, and here I come, table 60. Her tray, now weightless, as she sliced against a sensate current of hostility, ice cubes tinkling glasses like summer wind chimes. She set the salad before a thin man with red, bushy arms, purple cheeks, and whiskey eyes touched by fire. "Can we see your fucking manager? You know how long we've been waiting?" Peggy passed the drinks out to the man. The wife with a baby nursing at a watermelon breast beneath her filthy t-shirt, the two little boys with NASCAR ball caps jabbing at each other with table knives. 23 minutes, sir. "Listen, college sweetie pants," the wife said sardonically as the baby's fabric-shrouded body squirmed amid harsh, unpleasant suckling. "We gonna eat for free." Her sole bottom tooth bit into the upper lip. The baby farted. The boys chuckled and clanked knives. "You tell that to your boss." "Thank you," Peggy smiled. "I've waited a year and a half for this." "Don't be thanking me," called the wife as Peggy turned to leave. "You won't be thanking me in the unemployment line. We're gonna get you fired." "Thank you," said Peggy, bouncing away. "You're my table of angels calling me forth to greater things." She hummed to herself all the way to Sue's office. She stood at the office door and knocked. No reply. Peggy went around the corner and peered into the little round window. There she is, sitting on her fat donkey rump, chain smoking on the phone as usual. "I'll keep my integrity." Peggy rapped on the window. Sue swiveled around in her chair and screamed, "What?" Her arms raised and trembling in a violent V over her head, the phone dangling by the cord and whacking against an open desk drawer as it swung. Peggy pointed at the door. Sue mashed her cigarette into the ashtray and jerked out of her chair. The door swung open. Sue stood with hands on hips, black hair tied back in a tight bun, her nose upturned and fleshy at the tip, casting blue shadows. "Pig snout," Peggy smiled. "Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't fire you right now," Sue hissed. "Because I quit, donkey brains. What did you call me? No one quits on me. Get back out there, dear. You'd be sucking dick on the streets without your daddy's business, bitch. Go wait on the hayseed yourself and keep the tips." That's my experience of being a waiter.
Ow.
Wow.
I'm going to play a King Missile song that's about the more enjoyable things of work.
Thank you.
I got a poem about sort of about work, but it's my version of working. So it's called "The Ongoing Travails of Octoman Retail Clerk." Words slither out his mouth, able to run three registers at once with his eight tentacles, two to stand on, sliding around in a shallow pool, hugging the customers before they leave. Octoman is truly most efficient at his job. During off hours, he explores his newfound city and finds it not to his liking. Octowomen prefer their dates to work better jobs than him, accountants or artists, not cheap sales clerks. He lives at his job, married to the store. Regulars show up just to see him at work, but internet access soars, causing the customer base to dwindle. Once the store closes, he lops around at home, unemployed, depressed. He jumps off a bridge, never to be seen again.
Wow.
Cool.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
I forgot the ending. I wrote that a long time ago. Yeah. Believe it or not, there is a movie called Octoman.
Octoman.
Yeah, he only has six arms, actually. That's a little problem with that movie.
He doesn't have eight.
Why does he only have six arms?
There is only so much they could afford him in the special
effects. The budget.
Yeah.
And the budget. He might have had eight. I don't know. It just didn't really look like it. It's a very, yeah.
Oh, wow. You do what you can with the budget you have.
Yes. Yes, they did what they could. And the actors and the script and the, yeah. But, yeah, it was, I don't know. That was a movie I had nightmares about as a child because I saw a commercial for it one night and I didn't see the movie. So the version in my head was much better than the film itself.
Well, I'm going to tell my girlfriend, Brenda, we need to see that right before the total eclipse. We're going to see that movie.
One of the problems of that movie is it's poorly lit, so it looks like it was filmed during an eclipse.
Oh, perfect. Then we can find the chickens who take a little nap during the eclipse, because when it gets dark, they have to go to bed. So
I didn't even know that.
Yes, I'm going to find a chicken coop.
Hmm.
I don't know where one. I probably won't. I'm too lazy.
Only for the eclipse, or is this an ongoing commitment?
It's just
two
and a half minutes of the eclipse. I want to see the chickens take a nap.
I thought the eclipse was going to last like 20 minutes.
Because my friend Mary used to babysit them when we lived at Poet's Porch across the street. They had chickens, and she babysat them. And at dusk, they get a little nervous, and they climb on their little perches, jockeying for sleep position. So one can only imagine during the eclipse what they're going to do.
I think everyone's going to be, I mean, all the animals will be freaking out. Like, what's going on?
I plan on freaking out.
How about you, Melissa? Is going to ask for wet food. I don't know. I'm going to be working. Yeah, I don't know.
That's our cat's answer to everything.
Ask for wet food.
Meow.
Yes.
So actually now is about the time when I would promote readings that are coming up, open mic series that are happening. Melissa, you already mentioned your reading series, or not a reading series, it's a event. It's going to be monthly, correct?
Like, yeah,
third Sunday of every
Sunday
month.
And the reason it's on Sundays is because when I was working at my last position, that was the only day I could reliably have off. But that could change. I also need to work with people's on their schedule. But let's say it's one Sunday every month. It is this month.
Right.
Okay.
It's very fluid.
Okay, so it's kind of fluid.
Yeah.
So, Mike, you occasionally host. You still host Tony's Talking To. Sometimes.
I have hosted, but I actually haven't for about 3 years.
Oh, okay.
But I have on occasion have been a temporary host here and there. The old Blue Monk series under Becca Yenser. Hosted that a few times. And Tony's through the years I've hosted a few times. But other than that, I like the pressure of not hosting, and I usually make it to the Tony the pressure of not hosting. Because
yes.
It's a different kind of pressure when you're just there to read or enjoy it. The open mics I go to regularly, the Tony's Tavern, is still going on West Burnside and 19th or so. I've been going there for 10 years now, and that's where I met at least you, Patrick, and then Melissa shortly after. I still go there. It's the first Monday of every month. It starts about 9 p.m. And I go to the Angst Gallery reading in Vancouver, hosted by Christopher Luna and Tony Partington Luna. On Main Street, right next to historic Kiggins Theater. Every second Thursday of the month, sign up. It's 6 to 7, and the reading starts at 7. It's a great one. And this Sortovia reading I've talked about, it's a weekly reading every Monday. Show up at 7 to party on the porch. 8 o'clock it starts, and that's at a house. I think it's 1013 Southeast 13th Avenue. So that's what I do. It's a pleasure not to host, but I appreciate hosts because I have done it.
And I just had one, not really an announcement, but I just wanted to mention that, Walt Curtis unfortunately has been in the hospital for like about a week, maybe a little more. But last I saw him on Saturday, he was much, much better. But I'd like, everyone to know we really want him to get better, and hopefully he'll be here next month, second Monday of next month.
That'd be great.
Talking Earth.
And can I mention a few things?
Sure.
And you guys can fill in the blanks, because I really haven't been going to events. Until very recently, I was working evenings. But I know that Amanda Cochran...
Hellstrom White.
Hellstrom
White. And Curtis White Girl.
Where did I get that from?
Right.
I know Amanda. Sorry about that, Amanda. There's, and yeah. Curtis.
There's an open mic right on Sunday nights at the Big Ligralski.
Yes.
Mm.
That they run. And they also have, I believe it's the first Tuesday of the month, is New Poet Challenge, and the first Wednesday of the month is... great, I'm going to mess that up. It's like Poetry Warriors. It's another... Why it's not? a feature reading at Common Grounds Coffee House on Hawthorne, around past 40th and Hawthorne, like 42nd or so.
Sweet.
Yeah, so there are a number of events around town.
I've also heard of this new reading at the Eastburn on every Wednesday, at Eastburn Tavern on Eastburn Side around 20th, I think.
Wow.
There's a Facebook event page for it. I think it's around Eastburn Side and 20th. I used to live in the area. But there's probably lots of readings we don't even know about.
And there's a bunch
this
of...
This is so true.
And there's a bunch of features, I think, at Mother Foucault's bookstore as well.
Yes.
It's not like necessarily a series, but they have a lot of... like. Check Mother Foucault's because they have a lot of poetry readings
is
there.
Is that Dan Raphael's series?
No, Dan Raphael's series is also right. Outer Southeast. Actually, if one of you will read a poem, I could go look that up magically somehow and tell everyone where it is.
Okay, I nominate Mike.
Sure, Patrick. I'd be happy to read a poem while you look for that information. So
I'm not looking for it. I'm just secretly figuring it out.
But I'm going to read a also from this novel I tried to write or did write, but then left 15 years ago, a chapter called Sandwich Land. Todd, the owner of Sandwich Land, customer complaints in hand, addresses his employee, Eric. Eric, I own 3 stores. You'd do well to follow my example. Todd rapped his knuckles on the table, his upper lip glazed with sweat and twitching. The business of America is business. Yeah, man, I hear you. Eric sniffled, wiping at the nasal drainage with an index finger. But the business of Eric is good-naturedness, boss. And that's got to be good for business, which has got to be good for Todd. See, man, I think good. And by the way, I only smoke plain old tobacco at work. I'm not smoking no joints. I roll my own, but it's legal. Eric loves freedom. Yes, sir. Gilbert remained within earshot, handling sandwiches over to Sam in assembly line fashion after placing cheese and meat on them. Sam assumed the role of vegetable architect, but paused intermittently to wipe at his eyes with mustard-stained gloved hands. He realized he was falling behind and flailed desperately at the lettuce and tomato bins, slopping on the produce as quick as he could. Sarah squirted condiments and attended to the wrapping and bagging. She kept hissing at Sam, "Come on, hurry up!" Andy, the shift leader, stood nonchalantly by the cash register bouncing a basketball, occasionally yawning or staring at his underlings with a mixture of disgust and pity. Todd continued, "Eric loves freedom, huh? Well, you know what freedom means to me, Eric." Eric shrugged, his chin still cupped in his hand. "Freedom means work harder. Work harder, and the American dream is within reach. You do believe in the American dream, don't you, Eric?" Todd huffed, inflating his hard chest, sculpted by years of weightlifting, his gaze orange-tanned, his smile smug. Beady brown eyes reflected harsh white interior light as he scrawled carefully and slowly on a piece of official Sandwich Land stationery. Todd set the fountain pen down and gazed proudly at the singular word he had written, America, AMERICA. He peered questioningly into Eric's eyes, awaiting comment. "You should be awfully proud of yourself, boss. You got vision, yes, sir. But I think it was my grandma who used to say, work smarter, not harder. That's what I live by. I think we're here to be smart human beings who think and have fun, don't you, boss?" Eric raised his right hand, expecting a high five. Didn't get it. "You know what I think, Eric? I think what we do here at good old Goose Hollow Sandwich Land is more important than just providing quality food in a speedy manner. I think what we do is a little bigger than that. These are war times, you know, and what we do in a small way aids and abets a greater cause." Todd pawed at his hair's slickness, straightened his posture in his seat, and continued, "We all gotta be at our best, you know. We gotta be all we can be for America. America's sake. That includes lawyers and police officers and judges and news reporters and homeland security agents, as well as small business owners and sandwich artisans. We all serve our part for the greater whole, Eric, and all I ask from you is that you do your part for America in her time of need. I'm a good American, boss. I try. I'm a good guy, a good worker, a good friend, and if you ask LaToya, my little cherry Pop-Tart, she'll tell you, I'm a good lover. Yes, sir, Mr. Todd, that's what she says. Well, what I'm hearing here, Eric, is a bunch of I'm this and I'm that, and the eyes should be subordinate to America. Now, come on, son. I know from football the benefit of yielding before a greater good, a greater goal, a goal infinitely larger than petty self-interest. We are part of Team America. And now at the conclusion of my address, I put it to you, Eric. Todd pressed an index finger to his pursed lips, pausing in contemplation. What, boss? Eric had taken Todd's pen in hand and taken the stationery with America written on it and proceeded to draw artful roses with voluptuous naked women dancing in the midst. Along the edges he wrote in beautiful looping cursive script the words, Free love, free America, free love, free America, till the entire page was framed with it. He signed his name Eric, E-R-I-C. He set the pen down, yawned, and smiled at the ceiling. Like my drawing, boss? Let's get back to business, Eric. You must realize that in these times of trouble, self-sacrifice is required for the good of the country. You must realize that you are a cog in the greatest machine in history, that as a cog, you must function at your best, that there is no reward, no gold, no blonde-haired nymph spread out on the bed at the end of the rainbow, no I to rake in the glory. You must realize, Eric, that there is no I in America. There is no me in America, and there sure as hell ain't no Eric in America. Do you understand? Eric bent over in his seat, clutching his stomach with both hands, belching in guffawed laughter, which resounded musically in echoes off the walls of the sandwich shop. Gilbert was in the middle of asking a squirrely businessman what kind of bread he wanted, tried to contain himself, but couldn't. The sobering pent-up pressures of the day yielded to high-pitched squeals. Sam likewise lost it. Sarah didn't get it. Andy dribbled the basketball while grinning at his watch. What? What? Todd yelled out to everyone. You guys think that's funny? So that's what Sandwich Land Subway gets. they ended up firing me the only time I was fired, which was the most traumatic thing I've ever been to.
I've been pretty bummed about I got let go by one of those canvassing, like you walk around trying to get money for the environment. I did that tried doing that one summer from college, and I was terrible at it, so I lasted 2.5 days or whatever.
Oh,
and I was really upset, and then I went back to my grocery store job. But that was on the, in between going to college, basically. But I wrote a story about him. Yes. I wrote a story about him, and it's one of the few things I wrote that's realistic. There's no monsters in it, except that I titled the story, I stole a line from Dracula for the title of the story, and at the end of the story, the two people who run the canvassing thing are like counting the money, and they're like, their door has a mirror on it, and it's such an angle that they don't show up in the mirror because
terrifying.
No, it's not terrifying. It's just symbolic, not okay. They're not actually vampires. That would have been interesting.
Oh, that makes it nicer.
Vampires for the environment.
Would you like to sign up and give me your blood?
Charity muggers.
The charity muggers are vampires. Anyway, I was going to, discover magically, using my Ouija board, that, this Thursday, August 17th, yes, that is this Thursday, Dan Raphael's reading series is happening at Backstory Books.
Yes.
Which is at 6010 Southeast Foster Road. And it's James Grable and C.E. Putnam. So it's a pretty good reading, actually. They have a lot of stuff they could read. And tomorrow, I did want to mention, even though it's not really poetic, the Standing Rock Legal Update and Urgent Call to Action is happening tomorrow. That is a benefit tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. at 1226 Southwest Salmon Street, which I think that might be in front of, that might be an embassy or something, so they might be protesting somewhere.
Right on.
Yeah. I got a short poem that's not about work. That's, is that allowed?
No, yeah, that's fine, because everything is kind of about work if you think about it.
Well,
did you work on the poem?
No. It just came to me. It just came to me.
It's perfect.
I didn't even edit it. You can probably tell that when I read it.
Awesome.
Queen of Clouds. She loves Portland except for the 3 months termed summer. Allergic to sunlight, yet not a succubus. She wants clouds, clouds, clouds for cover to paint the town black. Her dream day, rain continually pouring down, not enough for a flood. Her favorite forecast is overcast with day-long drizzle. Clear blue skies drain her spirits, and she hates to leave her coffee-colored umbrella at home. When can I wear my favorite raincoat? She mutters to herself on the max. Last week she attended a rain dance, but it hasn't worked yet. The sky a barren plain of blue without any life-saving herds of white or gray. Her favorite hue, Portland gray. She paints her apartment that color each summer. She may want to crawl under a rock, find shelter against the sun, but these dark glasses, black leather jacket allow survival of the dry season. If the summer drought keeps on, her skin will begin to brightly tan. She will become too beautiful to live in Portland. Mere mortals shall fall dead at her feet. Waiters, supermarket cashiers, and bartenders would die before serving her. She would starve to death in the desert sands grounded on her brilliant beauty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because under those gray Portland skies, we go to work.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. They haven't been lately. That's kind of why I read that.
Oh, thank you. Bring them on.
hopefully that works as a rain dance, but I don't know if that's true.
It's hard. It's hard for me to create when it's just sunny and there's a heat wave.
100 degrees.
And, yeah. But there was something I wanted to put out to you too in the universe and KBOO listeners, which is that we're talking about work, and I've been reading lately about money, and I want to say that I am ready for abundance.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. No, I've been reading some interesting things. I don't have a writing ritual right now, sadly, but I do have a reading ritual where I go to a very large bookstore where I can go and pick out different books and sit in their coffee shop and read and write stuff in my notebook. So I have like a sketchbook of ideas. I've been reading about habits. I've been reading about business, you know, because that's not something I've done. And I've been reading about money. And to me, it's interesting because as writers, we know about the power of words. And so today I was reading a little bit about how if I say, oh, well, it's going to be a long time before I can afford a vacation, that what this author calls universal intelligence will say, okay, duly noted, no vacation for Melissa. So yeah.
Yeah.
So I want everyone to know, vacation. Scotland, here I come.
You're going to make it there. Yeah, you're going to make it there.
Get out of the United States.
Meanwhile, Brenda, my girlfriend, please keep gambling. I want you to get that with the big lotto thing or whenever that day is, because you know you can't win if you don't play.
Okay. I don't have any wishes for the universal consciousness or whatever it is, other than
I think it was universal intelligence,
possibly improving the collective intelligence in the United States.
Oh, an end to the idiocracy.
I wondered how far we would get before that came up.
Yes. Well, yes. it is KBOO. We do have to talk about that.
Yeah.
That's a rule.
But
yes,
we do. Mike, do you have a poem to end on? It can fit within 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, I'd like to talk before I read it. It's short and it's kind of negative. So before I get to that, I want to talk a bit about how I've thought about writing about work over time. When I was younger, work was such a traumatic thing to me that it would be a year or two after quitting a job that I would even be capable of going to the emotions of a negative job and being able to put that down on paper. And it's just in the last 5 years, and I'm 50, so finally, at age 45, I started getting a little better at not taking things personally, because I've always worked with the public at what I've considered service jobs, and that was my choice, because I wanted to focus on being a writer, and best decision I ever made was quitting law school so I could do that. But it took a long time before I could get a better handle on work, and I worked at a convenience store for about a year and a half downtown, and I had a crazy boss, and so many times the problem has been the boss at the job. The boss, either me thinking the boss isn't sensitive or smart enough or whatever, it's been a problem. So this is called So Much to Face. My first thought of the day is, Christ, I've got a lot to face. Like, how can I possibly go to that shitty convenience store job with that stupid, incompetent, fundamentalist boss running a business with a Bible and a calculator in his mind that hasn't worked in a decade? Mike, the cash is short $100 again. What are we gonna do about this? My entire life, I've worked for imbeciles who thought they were great men. 70 years old and you can't count, Wendell. I say to him, maybe you're not taking everything into account, like cash back, or I don't make mistakes, he says. Don't make mistakes. Your entire life is a mistake, you child. You tell me to lie to people to enrich your sad existence. You smile the evil smile of the saved because once upon a time you said yes to a third-rate God the Executioner fairy tale. My God just wants to get along. You preach against smokes and beer but gladly pocket the profits from selling them. You call your own wife stupid, your wife who places the order. You say you feel sorry for her, and your daughter, your own daughter, who's afraid of you and practically works for free, who calls the store and says, is he gone yet? Pray, I say. But I lack the guts to quit. That is my disease. Paralyzed by the dread of yet another job search, there's no place I want to work. I'm too tight.
Sounded terrible.
Really bad.
Yeah, I'm trying to, I don't know. I mean, I guess everyone has, like, bad jobs. You said before we went on the air, though, that you actually enjoy your current one.
I love my current job. I'm not going to give the company's name, but I love it. I work events. I work in theaters. I get to see very cool things like concerts. I'm going to see Brian Ferry at the Schnitzer tomorrow night. So people can probably figure out who
I'm
jealous
for now.
From that.
Me too.
And yeah. He still looks beautiful in his first-rate suit in his 70s. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Can you get me into Roxy Music later? No, just
just show up around 7:30 and we'll see what we can do. I probably can't do anything.
I'm kidding. I'm stuck. I'm going to be working my job where I'll be playing music and trying to sell and looking at records that people bring in to sell to us and all that.
Put on some Roxy Music.
Which, well, yeah, maybe I will. Yeah, actually, now that I think about it. Yeah, and I have collaborated with Ceylon Anderson on a zine, Record Store Clerk, and hopefully number two is coming out soon, which I won't spoil anything out of it. But yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I think I'd like to thank my performers, my guests tonight. I'd like to thank Mike G.
Thank you.
I'd like
thank
to thank my wife, Melissa Solito.
Thanks, Patrick.
For coming on. And yes, there's that working artist interview on next Sunday at what time?
5 o'clock till 6:30
at People's Food Co-op. And until then, Talking Earth will be happening next Monday at 10 p.m. Stay tuned for Subhuman Intellect Theater.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The following program is an opinion piece produced independently by a KBOO volunteer. The thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect that of KBOO or any of its employees. Also, this program features frank discussions of sexual acts and language that may not be appropriate for sensitive listeners. Discretion is advised.
Cowardice! Are you serious? Apologies for freedom.
I can't handle this!
When freedom rings,
answer the call!
On your feet,
stand up tall!
Freedom's on our shoulders,
USA!
Enemies of freedom,
come on, boys, take them down!
President Donald Trump knows how to make America great. Deal from strength or get crushed every time.